Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. One in four African-American families is affected by Down syndrome, but at the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio, membership is about 5% Black. Research shows that people with disabilities already are less likely to seek help because of finances, transportation challenges, and cultural barriers. Coming up, we'll hear from the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio about how they're working to turn that around. We'll also hear from a couple with a child who has been duly diagnosed with Down syndrome and autism. Joining us now, Rebecca Baum. She's the Chief of Developmental Behavioral Pediatrics at Nationwide Children's Hospital. She joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
When a child is born with Down syndrome, what's the protocol? How are the services meted out and offered up?
No, it's a really important question, and I think, unfortunately, there's what we should be doing ideally, mm-hmm. and there's still a discrepancy between that and what actually happens in practice. I think one of the challenges is that sometimes families will know prior to the birth if, in fact, the child has Down syndrome. And in other cases, it sort of comes as a surprise, and sometimes mm-hmm. that surprise happens in the delivery room. Or soon after the baby's birth. And unfortunately, we haven't always handled those situations well. And I'm thrilled that you're having the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio on later today, because they've been a real champion, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics Ohio chapter, in trying to improve the family's experience in some of those circumstances.
You know, I've been writing about this for literally decades now and reporting on it. And I remember even 30 years ago, things had already changed dramatically. It was like a whole new generation of opportunities for children who were born diagnosed with Down syndrome. But it was still a matter of that issue of how much, whether you know it and whether you're expecting it and whether it's a surprise. Why does that change the dynamic when it's a surprise?
I think the difference when it's a surprise relates to a couple different things. And there's a wonderful essay on this. I can't remember the exact title, but it's something along the lines of, you know, I thought I was going to one destination and I ended up in a different place. And it's a wonderful place, and I really enjoy it, but it's really different than where I thought I was going. I think sometimes for families and for us as health professionals, if we know that information ahead of time, we're able to plan and get information, get supports, and somehow the unknown feels a bit less scary. Unfortunately, there's still a fair amount of stigma with regards to Down syndrome and other developmental disabilities. And so sometimes healthcare providers, even though they mean well, will do things like make comments that unfortunately feel somewhat disparaging for the family or for the child. I think we really, to healthcare providers, invite them to sit down, have an honest and open conversation with the parents, congratulate them on the birth of their beautiful baby, mm-hmm. and then really make sure they engage in a conversation about what they're seeing and what are the next steps. And that's where the preparation piece is really important. And again, there's been some wonderful efforts from DSACO, the Down Syndrome Association, and the Ohio AAP, American Academy of Pediatrics chapter, to make sure birthing hospitals have resources available that they can give to families as soon as that conversation occurs.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about cultural barriers for particularly minorities, African-Americans, when they are affected by a diagnosis of Down syndrome. My guest right now, Rebecca Baum, she's Chief of Developmental Behavioral Pediatrics at Nationwide Children's Hospital. If you have a question or comment, give us a call this hour, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's so important to write Dr. Baum, I mean, because what I've learned over the years is the sooner you identify as soon as the diagnosis is made, there's more and more we're learning about how early you can start with therapies and that sort of thing.
That's exactly right. And I would say that that's really true for children with Down syndrome as well as children with other developmental disabilities too. And so that's really why, certainly in the pediatric world and even in early childhood education and childcare, we're really trying to identify concerns early on so that we can make sure we link families and children with appropriate intervention, because outcomes are better when that early identification and early intervention happens.
What have you learned about cultural barriers that exist and why people don't get help right away? Is it just a stigma issue, or do they not feel welcome? There are not enough people who look like them?
No, I think it's really all of the things that you mentioned. There's actually a wonderful publication from the Neisonger Center at Ohio State University that talks about the double burden, meaning, you know, we know that minorities may have reduced health outcomes, and we know that the same is true for individuals with developmental disabilities. And so as we think about a child who maybe is an underrepresented minority in terms of race and ethnicity and also has a developmental disability, in a sense, that is sort of an even more challenging situation potentially. So what we see with families who may be from an underrepresented minority group and their child is not developing perhaps as other children that they see on the playground or at daycare, there's sometimes some shame or stigma because of cultural beliefs. We tend to see that these are also risk factors for families feeling disenfranchised or excluded. And so sometimes they don't have access to the same social supports, and that could be because of language, it could be because of culture, it could also be because of logistical issues like transportation and insurance. So all sorts of barriers, unfortunately, that are out there for families.
Jacqueline in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi, Ann.
Go ahead.
I am a social worker. I work here in Columbus, and I work primarily with the refugee and immigrant population. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of families, not a lot, a minority of families, but, you know, a couple every year who have children when they arrive here in Columbus with their children have Down syndrome. And I really have a hard time connecting them. They don't understand kind of the diagnosis in general. The kids haven't gotten services. So I see a lot of delays, speech, physical, mental, behavioral.
That are unaddressed.
Language barriers, some of the other barriers you were just talking about, like transportation and insurance issues, and just wondering if you guys have suggestions of good places for me to start to get them the services that they need.
It's a good question. Rebecca Baum?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it sounds like the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio may actually be speaking soon, and they have some wonderful resources for families of children with Down syndrome, and have really recently made some very special efforts reaching out to underrepresented families in their association. And those groups include, for example, Hispanic families. And so I would definitely encourage you to contact DSACO, or the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio.
Thanks a lot, Jacqueline, for that call. We will have a link to the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio on our website. So anybody who's interested in checking that out, go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll hopefully be able to help you out that way. When you meet with parents with their first child with a developmental disability, what are the concerns you hear in general, and how do they differ from people from underrepresented minority groups?
So I think the concerns that parents often have a lot to do with what information they have experienced or bumped into in their own lives as parents. And so I think what I usually try to do is really understand where the parents are coming from, what information do they have so far, and where are perhaps some knowledge gaps that we can help get them to really have the information that they need to be most effective as parents. You know, I think the other piece that it's really important to think about, especially as we're working with minority families, is to really understand things from the family's perspective. What is it that they want for their child? What's important to them? And we really want to understand their goals before we accidentally impart our cultural goals or expectations for that child. So I think that piece is really important too, thinking about things from the family's perspective, as well as sharing the information that we know about early intervention. And I'll just put a plug out there too for a program called Early Intervention. And here in Ohio, we refer to it as Help Me Grow. That is a free program. It's federally funded and also some state funding too, and it really ensures that if there is a concern about a child's development, that that child receives an appropriate appropriate assessment and intervention. So definitely check out Help Me Grow or Early Intervention
The issue of getting involved at a very early point after the diagnosis is critical, is it not? I mean, it does make a difference in the outcomes for the child.
Absolutely. And so we really think of this period before birth and then the first few years after birth as being critical for brain development and really having important implications for that child's health, mental health, and well-being as they grow into later childhood and even adulthood. And so we're really looking, you know, ideally at the prenatal period and even maternal health as we think about outcomes for children. But absolutely, that early childhood period is critical to healthy brain growth and development.
Pat in Upper Arlington, you're on the air with Dr. Rebecca Baum of Nationwide Children's Hospital. Hi, Pat.
Yes, I just wondered, I had often heard that the age of the parent has a lot to do with, in other words, if you're an older mother, you have a higher chance of having a Down syndrome child. Is that true, or have I been misinformed?
Yeah, that's a really, I think it's an important question because, so certainly the risk for having a child with Down syndrome increases after a certain age in mothers, but because more younger women, have babies, we actually do see younger women, you know, women in their 20s and 30s who deliver babies with Down syndrome. And I think sometimes, moms are great at blaming themselves, right? So What did I do wrong? I'm 20 years old. I thought this only happened to women who are older. And so you're absolutely right. We do see Down syndrome occurring really in mothers of all ages.
Pat, thanks a lot for that call. There are a lot of, I hate to say misconceptions, but there's a lot of information out there that sometimes isn't always on point. Rebecca Baum, you recommend, again, if people want to learn more about this, the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio is a great resource in general.
That's absolutely correct. And you know, we are in the age where there's just so much information at our fingertips. And unfortunately, some of that information really is not accurate or correct. So if families have questions or concerns, I would encourage them to talk with their child's primary care provider. Mm-hmm. There's terrific information out there from Down Syndrome Association, from various organizations with regards to other developmental disabilities like autism, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the National Institutes of Health also have some wonderful evidence-based information that's available in the public domain. So we definitely want to make sure families get accurate information, as you mentioned, to really dispel some of the myths about the joys of raising a child and having a person in your family with a developmental disability.
You know, I was at an event, a fundraiser event for FRAXA, which is the organization that raises money for the study of Fragile X syndrome, which is another I guess it's the only known cause of autism. And there's also developmental disabilities usually associated with it. In any event, I remember meeting this couple that had just moved to town, and they heard about this event, and they were so excited. They said, we wondered where would we find the community that we need to just cope with this. They had two children, which is not unusual with Fragile X, because it is a genetic issue. But what about that community? Do you notice the difference when you're working with families, the ones who have a community, have people to talk to, have that way to vent and share information than those who don't?
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, because one of the things we want to make sure that we're doing is really supporting families and children throughout childhood, because sometimes they can bump into different stressors or challenges than parents of typically developing children. And so having that support system is critical. And as we've talked about some associations for different conditions, mm-hmm. I think what also can be really difficult, sometimes developmental disabilities, we don't have an underlying cause that we can point to, mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's a very rare cause that we can point to. And so making sure that families who maybe don't have a diagnosis that they can associate with a specific advocacy or support group, we need to be attending to those families too. And you'll see various models out there. I'm privileged to work at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and we have a program in which we connect families who serve in a mentorship role to families who are asking for some support. And I would say really whatever support system works best for the family is really what we want to help link the family with. So that could be faith-based organizations, it could be community groups, or it could be diagnosis or condition-specific organizations.
Well, Dr. Baum, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Rebecca Baum. She's Chief of Developmental Behavioral Pediatrics at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Coming up, we are going to hear from the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio. And also we're going to hear from a couple with a child of their own who has been diagnosed with Down syndrome and how they've sort of managed and traversed the terrain of this experience. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In a 2011 study of 2,000 parents of children with Down syndrome, the National Library of Medicine found that only a small percentage of them were embarrassed by the child or experienced feelings of regret. That's a big change over decades past. Why, then, lower levels of participation in groups established to help them in among minority and underserved groups. The Down Syndrome Association in Central Ohio says that too few of those parents get the help they need and deserve. Joining us is the organization's president and CEO, Carrie Jones. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Also joining us are Melody and Carl Bogan. They're parents of a child with Down syndrome. They join us as well. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us, Ann.
Good morning.
Melody, what was your experience? You're African-American, so you're part one of those traditionally underserved groups, a member of that falls between the cracks sometimes. What was your experience after the diagnosis?
After the diagnosis, Carl and I, we have a unique experience coming into Down syndrome because I was a graduate student in the animal sciences, reproductive biology specifically.
Okay.
So out of all things in the world to have done studying genetics, we came in pretty prepared. I don't know if the doctors thought we were very prepared. So there was a little bit of dust up in the beginning. We came into Down syndrome with the question raised to us by the attending, by the way. So we came into Down syndrome with a bit of a shock.
You weren't expecting this.
We were not.
Okay.
All of our ultrasounds, all of our prenatal testing was
beautiful. The genetic testing and everything.
Everything was flawless. All of his ultrasounds were flawless. And then he came out this beautiful 5-pound boy with this cute little kitten cry. And we held him and they whisked him off for low blood sugar. We thought that was the shock of his birth. It was only 2 days later that the attending said, by the way, did someone happen to mention to you that we're doing testing for Down syndrome? And we were just floored. Not about our son's diagnosis, just the way it was delivered, of course.
And you know, Dr. Baum from Nationwide said that they got to work on that.
Oh,
it matters, right?
Oh, yeah, it does matter. And we have been a part, and very fortunate, Carla and I have been a part of some parent forums hosted by DeSocco and the university where we're getting to engage with those students, medical students, genetic counselors, and it has been so affirming. To be able to teach and share our story so we know that future doctors are going to do amazing things in supporting families at the diagnosis. Oh,
Carl Bogan, what do you tell these students when you're talking to them?
Well, I tell them, you know, the biggest thing that we have to look at is, you know, bedside manner and how to deliver, you know, diagnosis and that kind of thing. You know, it's more than just, you know, a routine
afterthought.
It's more of a, you know, develop a relationship with the, you know, the patients and that kind of thing. So
You were in the hospital when you found out?
We both were. My husband had been to the NICU earlier that morning to see our son.
The neonatal intensive care.
Yes, yes, of course. And then he had wheeled me over. I was exhausted, but I was worried about our little boy. How in the world did he have this low blood sugar? Again, that was the extent of our concerns. And then to be presented with the, by the way, and it just turned our world upside down. But what was really beautiful about the experience is, although we found it shocking, our family and our friends, and we have to give credit to even our church pastor, everyone showed up immediately. We got materials from DeSocco, from the Down Syndrome Association. We received a packet of information. There was even a nurse at the hospital in the neo-intensive care unit who also had a child with Down syndrome who put a note in our son's crib.
Aww.
So we were just immediately flooded with love.
And that matters. I mean,
yes, it does.
And knowing and finding other people that have gone through what you're going through.
Absolutely.
Makes a big difference.
Yes, it does.
The isolation. So, you know, Carrie Jones, how do you find the Bogans out there? How do you know where they are?
Well, for the last few years, our association has made a serious commitment in medical outreach. We started a medical advisory.
So when there's a diagnosis, there's a trigger?
Yes.
Okay.
So we started a medical advisory committee comprised of representatives from the different healthcare systems that we serve throughout the 23 counties that we serve in Central and Southern Ohio, and really took a critical eye to how do we really get someone connected at the time of diagnosis? And let's be strategic about this. So we've created different nuances depending on the healthcare system because everyone operates differently.
Well, what about privacy? I mean, when somebody reached out to you, did that bother you at all that, well, everybody knows our business?
I don't know about my husband, but I don't think that we felt that way at all. As a matter of fact, it was feeling kind of isolated. You feel like it's happened only to you.
Yeah.
And it was in the outreach by DeSocco. It was in the outreach from our church. It was in the outreach by family and friends. One of the first things we've done that I do love about, I think, the culture of the African-American, being African-American, but I think other cultures do this too. So I certainly don't want to sound like no other cultures do this. But what I do love about our family, we immediately, while our son was still in the NICU, we held a family conference call, freeconferencecall.com. We got on a free conference call across the U.S., and we said that this is our son, Alan. He is our Alan. Everyone has a part in making sure that his life is the very best. And we've had that ownership since the day he's been born. So every milestone, everything he's done, everybody feels a part of that because they've contributed. So I think that that's made a big difference.
It sounds
It gave us
wonderful.
The opportunity to let everybody know that, you know, this kind of disability is real in all cultures. So
yes, it is.
And one of the things I want to add is while we're working on this medical outreach, the component, there are two different components that we incorporate. One is just ensuring that families get accurate and up-to-date information when they're receiving the diagnosis. And the second part is if they're interested in connecting with us, they can fill out a waiver and then allow access for us to contact them. And they can choose what that looks like, whether that's an email, just sending a welcome package by mail, or doing a visit while they're still in the hospital. So that entirely falls onto the parent's comfort level. And we do not do any outreach without their consent.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Down syndrome in the community, and particularly for traditionally underserved groups. Joining us are Melody and Carl Bogan. They're parents of a child with Down syndrome, Alan. And also with us is Carrie Jones. She's president and CEO of the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. They have a, you know, as she mentioned, as Carrie mentioned, they have a new initiative out. Their outreach is they're trying to change the outreach to find other people that are falling through the cracks. The Bogans are not included in that. Carl Bogan, tell us about Alan.
Well,
how old is he?
He's 11 years old, born on June 4th of 2007. And, you know, he's
you smile, by the way. People can't see it, but you're smiling.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, he's a boy. So, you know.
You smile or you cry. It's one of the other.
Yeah, his disability doesn't stop me from, you know, treating him like a boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little, you know, you got to, you know, father, son, you got to be a little rough on him. Just, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, do a little bit of, you know, tagging and running and wrestling, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's good to have him. He's good. He's always smiling. He has that, you know, that nice, you know, and Down syndrome smile. And, you know, he has his, you know, he has his ways up.
The loving, caring. Mm-hmm.
You could tell when he has an attitude and, yeah. you know, that kind of thing, too. So,
you know, yeah. Things have changed dramatically from 50 years ago. Not only the health, you know, the wellness expectations are much greater than they used to be, but the services are there very immediately if you want them.
Absolutely.
What did you avail yourself of, Melody?
We were welcome to participate with the Little Buddies, which is a phenomenal with Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio, DeSaco. They offer the Little Buddies groups. So that was made available
what
for
is
us.
That?
That is where parents with very young children from newborns to toddlers can come and meet together, share together. And we attended a couple of those. I won't say that we attended tons of them, but it was so nice just in the beginning to realize that you're not alone. We were the very first thing that we did. I think the big initiative or push that we participated in was the buddy walk, the annual buddy walk, where families across Central Ohio descended onto Columbus. And there was just a sea of families and all these beautiful faces and children and young adults with Down syndrome. And Alan was barely 2 months old. And there we are at our first big event. And I just cried. I was just so overwhelmed with joy that we weren't alone. There were all these kind, warm faces. And we got to walk for our son, be his biggest advocate. And it was like it was like this big warm introduction and embrace. So we felt immediately welcome, and we have since. So I'm very grateful to everything that DeSaco has done for us, our community, from our church and our family and friends, because, again, I really feel like the village has really shown up for us.
You know, you have one big advantage that a lot of people, regardless of race or ethnicity or anything, has, and that's that you're a scientist. And you know a lot of things that everyday people don't know about expectations, about the science of all of this. That's a big advantage, I would think.
I think the bigger advantage is the fact that we love him for who he is.
Okay, it doesn't matter that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the science is helpful and it's resourceful, but Alan actually, I was in academia for a while and those things didn't work out. And I really had to do some reflection in my life of what mattered. And I have to say that Alan, his health crisis, health challenges, his developmental challenges actually steered me professionally from science into healthcare. which is where I work now.
Okay.
And that has been, for me, the most fulfilling thing, that your child, the one you birth, can actually save you, can steer you. And that's what Alan has done for us. He's made us richer. Our marriage is stronger because with Carl, I feel a real partnership. With our son, Alan, and our two daughters, 9 and 7, who are typical needs. And I believe that we are raising daughters, too, who are advocates for their brothers. And so life isn't perfect, but it's rich and it's real and it's authentic. And sometimes it's messy, but it's great. But it's great. And I know that every day I wake up next to a man who is committed to make sure that our children can thrive. So that's a good thing. So I think it's the love, not necessarily my background, that makes it so unique and powerful for us.
So, Carrie Jones, are these like your poster child for?
They're going to be from now on. Yeah. Tell you that much. They are a really amazing family, and their daughters are involved in a siblings group we have for siblings to connect. I'm personally a sibling myself. I have a brother with Down syndrome. So they are definitely really engaged and incredible, but their story is not unique.
Yeah.
And they do have a great marriage, but we also have families who are single parents, and they're rocking it too. And
yes,
they're
they
doing
are.
An amazing job. And I think the theme, from what I hear them talk about, that's really critical, is being able to connect with other people in the beginning. And whether that's your family or your friends or strangers who happen to be in the same circumstance as you, we want to make sure that we're there
exactly.
for those families. And we're offering those opportunities, because often we hear people call us and say, I've never even met someone with Down syndrome, and no one that I know has. So what do I do?
What does this even mean?
What do I do? Mm-hmm. And we connect them with a mentor, someone that can connect with them one-on-one if they're not interested in being a part of a larger group right away. And that's really important. It's really critical to make that connection and not feel alone. That's the hardest thing to hear when we get a call from a new parent is, I've been feeling so alone. But the best thing to hear is, I'm so grateful I found you. So we're very grateful.
Well, Melody and Carl Bogan, we have to say goodbye to you. I thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It's been a heck of an opportunity.
Melody and Carl Bogan are parents of a child with Down syndrome. They found the community they needed early on, and we're talking about why that's so important for people, particularly traditionally underserved minority and ethnic groups. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Still with us is Carrie Jones. She's president and CEO of the Down Syndrome Association in Central Ohio. We'll continue our conversation with her. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. More than 4 million people who are disabled in the United States depend on Social Security. A 2015 study by the Neisinger Center at Ohio State shows that for people who are disabled in between the ages of 16 and 64, the rate of poverty was twice as much as the general population in that age range. The challenges are even greater for people in minority groups who may not feel welcomed by organizations established to help them. The Down Syndrome Association in Central Ohio wants to change that. Still with us is the president and CEO of the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio, Carrie Jones. Thanks again for joining us, Carrie.
Thank you.
I want to first talk about when it occurred, or when the association, if this was a national movement or if it was a local effort, to just kind of saw the numbers and realized there were a lot of people falling through the cracks.
So for us, it began a few years ago as a part of our strategic plan. We realized that we had a really unique opportunity because we had the resources. A lot of other Down syndrome associations across the country are very fledgling. They're operated exclusively by volunteers, whereas our local association, we have paid people, which to me means consistency, mm-hmm. and able to deliver services on an ongoing basis and really measure growth and success. That's a little unique when you're
that's unusual then. This is a good place.
Yes. So that's a little unusual. And so for that, and we really focused on our strategic plan of identifying who is being underserved currently. And so there were a few different categories within that, one of which was the African-American community, the Somali population, the Latino community. But it also meant rural families, because we serve 23 counties, but you know, maybe we're doing a really good job here in Franklin County, but what about Athens and Knox County?
And they're kind of literally, not just figuratively, isolated.
Correct. So we began then drilling down even further of how can we really affect a change here, because these families aren't really gaining access to our offerings. So that was a really key thing for us to do. But when we really took a deep dive in looking at our membership database, the numbers speak for themselves. You know, 95% of our membership is Caucasian. So that's not representative of the Central Ohio community at all. So we then began saying, okay, how do we affect a change? And we started talking with families like the Bogans who were on earlier about what do we need to be doing differently? Because I am not a part of that minority demographic.
And what did they tell you?
They said something that...
Not the Bogans literally, but...
Well,
you know,
they were a part of a steering group, a work group, to identify things that we could be doing differently. And they suggested, along with several others, create opportunities that are just for us. And so that was a bit contrary to what I would have envisioned, because I don't want families to feel isolated even more. But their feedback was... We just showing that you care and making an effort that is exclusively for us is actually the opposite of what you might expect it to be.
And what did you find?
We hosted our first very specific African-American outreach event a couple of months ago, and I had the opportunity to be a part of that and just listen. And I was amazed at what I heard people sharing, and that they really wanted an opportunity to tell more people about the positive impacts of that they've experienced with their loved one with Down syndrome. But I also realized that so many families, because they aren't there in the very beginning connecting and talking, the Bogans mentioned the Little Buddies group, but many minority families don't participate in that group. Mm-hmm. Consequently, they're never sharing that initial birth story. Which means really they're having trouble getting past that in some ways, and not getting past
talking about it's a big deal.
Yeah. And I don't mean getting past it like they're really hung up on it, but that's a really critical piece when you're getting that diagnosis, is sharing that experience with someone else who gets it. And so really at that event, I went into it thinking, you know, this is going to be a time where we talk about how often we meet and where we meet and what we're going to offer at those meetings. But it became a place for people to share their birth stories, even if they had a 15-year-old or a 3-year-old.
It still mattered.
It was so critical for them to share that and connect in that way. It's a few steps back from where I thought we were going to be, but it was pivotal to recognize that.
Like what Melody and Carl, they started out telling us the day of the birth, and
yes.
that, and exactly how the attending physician explained things to them at the outset.
It's a flashbulb moment for families, and no matter how distant they are from the day they receive that diagnosis, it is a crystal clear memory for them, and they are very impacted by how it's delivered to them.
So you told me earlier that you also started a couple years ago reaching out to the Latino community, mm-hmm. and also the Somali community.
Correct.
Which is the second largest such community in the United States.
Yes.
What about the Latino community? That was a language barrier issue mostly.
A huge language barrier. So, you know, years before that, we started offering materials that can be translated. They're translated into several different languages, and we purchase mm-hmm. those materials to explain Down syndrome. Our website can be translated into 100 different languages. But reading, even for some cultures, doesn't it isn't a part of their culture to read a website or read materials. It's language. It's connecting face to face. So we do offer materials that can be that are translated, but we recognize too that we needed to have leaders internally as an organization, so that when that medical physician reaches out to us and says, you know, we've got a new family who is Somali. They do not speak very much English. What do we do? They could connect to me, but I don't speak Somali.
Mm-hmm.
We really need a resource that can speak Somali and connect with them and reach out to them and figure out how to be a support and can help us help them. So we have two amazing leaders, both who are fluent in Somali, and then additionally someone who's a part of the paid team with the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio, Arlene Raya, who speaks fluent Spanish and can help us connect with Latino families in Central Ohio.
And then also, as far as there's a lot of other concerns, the Somali community is an emerging group. Mm-hmm. It's marginalized by race, by culture. They're working through that, but it's still an issue. You have meetings near them where they live.
Yes, that's a critical component. You know, some of our events do take place within churches, but are some families going to be comfortable doing that? No. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we need to find a place
neutral,
that's safe and, a place that they can trust going to, which typically means somewhere they're already going. So we've been able to host events in community centers within, where a large population of that particular demographic might live. And it automatically helps build trust. I can say, the first meeting we had, there were only a couple of families.
Mm-hmm.
And then, they're kind of scouting it out.
Did you see the same dynamic as far as being around other people who know they can tell their story to?
Yeah. I honestly, to be truthful, can't understand some of what's communicated.
But you can tell.
Yeah. I don't know any Spanish either, unfortunately.
But you can tell when people are connecting.
You can. And in some cases, a couple of the people already knew each other. And so they kind of almost made a pact to come together.
Okay.
And then there are other people that are brand new and are meeting others for the first time.
And what are they telling you about what needs to happen for them to get more involved and avail themselves of all the services that are out there?
I think that how we have to view the services that we offer as an association as a whole is really taking almost a concierge type of approach of connecting one-on-one and listening to what some of the barriers are for the family, and then identifying how we can play a role in helping them, whether that's an educational support that they might need assistance with, or a health issue. It can vary depending on the family. And so we really need to take that time one-on-one. When you're talking about Down syndrome, it's already a smaller demographic
right.
of the overall population. Then when you narrow that down even more, it really needs to be on a one-on-one level.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm talking with the president and CEO of the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio, Carrie Jones, about what they're doing in terms of outreach to traditionally underserved minority groups, Latinos, African-Americans, Somali refugees that have settled in the area. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. How does, or what do we know about how social exclusion affects a child with a developmental disability, in particular Down syndrome?
We see a lot of families, when they are networked with each other, asking questions about health issues. So more recently, the AAP's healthcare guidelines address that sleep apnea is an issue and that children by the age of 4 should have sleep study testing done. That's, even though it's, in publication, it doesn't mean that it's actually in implementation.
Hmm.
So families might not know about that. That they need to be doing that. And we're really working to do that as much as we can. But if people aren't networked together, it's going to impact health. And health is, as we know, a critical component to living happy, healthy, highest potential lives that we all need.
How much are you working with hospitals, you know, who are there at the outset, and also caregivers, you know, medical caregivers and how they're managing their care for patients in these traditionally marginalized groups?
So a few years ago, really our main focus at the time was that new initial diagnosis. And since then, we've really stabilized that work and really seen an increase in the number of referrals and reach that we have with new families. But getting to what you're asking, we need to be recognizing that there are already people and children and adults living in our community that maybe didn't know about us yet. So we're really spending a lot of time now working with pediatric offices and looking at primary care physicians and talking with them to make sure that they know about what we can do to help them do their job better.
Hmm. I want to take a call now from Hamzi in Hilliard. Hamzi, you're on the air. Hi. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Hamzi, and I'm calling from Hilliard. Two things. One, the Somali community, yes, is an immigrant community, but we've been here for 20 years. So
right.
A lot of times when we frame the conversation as an immigrant community, there are negative, you know, connotations with that.
Gotcha.
There are a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs and a lot of good going in the community.
Sure.
So just wanted to kind of throw that on there.
Yeah.
And then number two, and more importantly, Down syndrome, in addition to mental health and other things like that, we're beginning to have that conversation, but there's a stigma. So we are having that conversation, but a lot of times people are uncomfortable. And I think, and a lot of people will agree, the first step is to pretty much just break that stigma and like a taboo topic. And we're actually seeing a lot of progress now. And hopefully we'll, you know, continue to see more progress here in the future.
There's a kind of a cultural stigma within the community of Somali immigrants. Point well taken, though, Hamzi. You're right that it's been a couple decades now. So there's a lot of established community as well. Carrie Jones, though, what about what Hamzi's saying?
I agree with Hamzi completely. It's that's what I'm learning, you know, and I think that can happen. There can be a stigma in any culture.
Sure.
But what we're learning is from talking with families who are connected to us that happen to be a part of the Somali community. They're saying, you know, we know these families, but they're not interested in connecting with other families, or they're not ready yet, or they're concerned they might maybe even assume that we're a part of the government sector and they're not really interested in connecting that way.
They're suspicious of that.
They don't know if we're just a nonprofit or, you know, what do we do with the information we collect? So we have many families that we work with who have not ever filled out a formal membership form because they don't really want anything on record.
If your membership has kind of is still static despite these efforts because of that.
I wouldn't say it's static, but on the, you know, on paper, it might appear that way in certain situations. But certainly that's not representative of the entire Somali community or Latino community. And there are exceptions, so to speak. But I think, there is a stigma. There can be a stigma for anyone, but you have to definitely factor that in to how you're doing your outreach, because not everybody is going to be ready the moment they get a diagnosis like the Bogans were.
Thanks to Hamzi for that call. And Carrie Jones, thanks to you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Carrie Jones is the president and CEO of the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. I want to say thanks to the All Sides staff for the week, producer Mary Lee Williams, assistant producer Kyle McKinnon, our All Sides interns, Martin Coleman, Kaylin Martin, Maisie Glockner, and our fellow Ray Brewster, who produced this show today, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks so much for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.